This is the On the Line podcast.
And we're back to another episode of the On the Line podcast here again with Noah. How you doing?
I'm good as always, man. Ready to get this week started. We're in full swing with a sports restart. Got some NHL, got some NBA, got some MLB. It's all good stuff.
I absolutely love it. Every day there's sports on. No matter when you turn the TV on, there's sports on all day, every day. I absolutely love it. Pumped up for this week. We actually have a special guest. Noah, do you want to introduce the guest this week?
I mean, if I have to, if you're not going to do it, I might as well. But, you know, in honor of talking about NHL, my brother is coming on to the show. Longtime hockey player, played hockey all throughout his life from, you know, youth all the way through high school, even some club in college, and now he's, you know, killing it in the beer league. So Nate, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, boys. Really appreciate the opportunity to come on here. Excited to get it going.
Let's get it going then. So what we have on the menu for today, what we're going to do is we're going to open the show. We're going to do a deep dive into hockey talk, and then we're going to go into some NFL talk. Recent contract negotiations happened. George Kittle, Everson Griffin, Kenny Clark, Alex Smith is back. And then we're going to go and finish the show with NBA talk. You know, the NBA matchups are set and the playoffs start this week. So there's so much to talk about. We may not do an in the news segment this week. We might just do NHL, NFL, NBA. And then, as always, we might give you guys, you know, you guys got to check our Twitter for our gambling takes. Noah and I have been posting our gambling takes every day, about 2 to 3. What do we do? 2 to 3 bets a day, right?
Yeah, we're doing about 2 to 3 bets a day right now, depending on what people like. If, you know, if we're doing well or if people want to hear more, we'll absolutely add more. But right now it's about 2 to 3.
What are we at right now? What's our record right now for the past week? 1 week.
We took a day off, I think, 2 days in a row. But you know, I think we had 3 or 4 days of action, and combined between the two of us, Mark, you went 7-2, and I believe I went 5-4. So what is that? Is that 12-6? So 66%. So we're winning. That's, you guys, a decent amount of money. We're both breaking even right now on some picks. We got some good. Some good underdog picks for the both of us that hit once or twice, and some pretty decent favorite lines. Nothing in, you know, nothing minus 1,000. We're not going to get that. We'll try to keep the win percentage around, you know, 50, but we're doing good.
Yeah, that's not bad at all. And, you know, for everyone listening, when we put the bets out there, we're betting them ourselves too, because we wouldn't give you guys anything that we wouldn't think is going to hit either. So, you know, 12-6, that's not bad. That's really good. And, you know, that's money to be made right there out there gambling and watching the games. I mean, you're watching them anyway, so why not put a few bucks down? But, you know what, let's get started here, NHL talk. So the NHL playoffs started this week, and they've been absolutely incredible. I think I could say, what do you guys think? You guys think the NHL playoffs been good?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's good. I'll defer to Nate here, though, to get into, you know, get us started off talking about just the overview. Nate, what do you think? You've definitely got the hockey expertise out of the both of us. What do you think of this coronavirus format? What do you think of, like, the whole, I don't want to call it March Madness style, but you had 24 teams in this. What do you think about having that many teams play, and what do you think of the playoffs so far?
So I'll have to just kind of give a kudos to the NHL just to start. I think they over the summer and over quarantine put an excellent plan in place as far as their return to play scenarios, the two bubbles. Everything seems to be operating well. And I know we touched on it as the show kicked off, but hockey on TV all day is great. I've been loving it. I know that Noah's been loving it too. And Mark, I'm sure you have, just having something to watch and being a hockey nerd, it's awesome. As far as the pace of play, I know some people were kind of worried, how would the no fans, especially if you've ever been to an NHL playoff game, the atmosphere is just unmatched for most of these teams in their home cities. And they use that as a big advantage when they're at their home place. It's kind of a difference maker. Some people worried that playing in front of an empty building would sort of dull the edge of the sword, but I think the pace of play has been great so far. and the talent is just there all around.
I agree with you too. I think that it's been great, but if you look at some players, I mean, look at Tuukka Rask. Like, he totally opted out because, and he said, I believe in an interview, that he said it doesn't feel like a playoff game. It feels more like an exhibition game. I mean, how do you keep, he seems to be the only player that's come out and said something like that. How do you keep that from, you know, do you think other players are thinking that, but maybe not saying it? I mean, when you watch it on TV, it kind of looks like a playoff game. I mean, they have the sound, the fans sound funneled in there. They got, you know, there's a lot going on. They got all the video boards playing. I mean, what do you think was going through Tuukka Rask's mind, and how do you think that affects the Bruins coming up? Nate, I'll go to you first.
I mean, honestly, I can't speak to the mental state of Tuukka Rask. To kind of play into the what are the rest of the guys thinking, they're all professionals. This is the game that they've been training to play their entire lives, and they know what the playoffs mean, whether there's butts in the seats or not. So I think you're seeing the sort of advent or still continuing the intense pace. As far as Tuukka's comments goes, if he's not into it, he's not into it. If he chooses not to play, that's his choice. But I no doubt this is going to affect the Bruins. It's just kind of hard to when you lose your number one goaltender. I mean, the guys are still going to play the same in front of you, but that's never going to leave the minds of the guys in the dressing room for the Bees.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, maybe yesterday it didn't affect them too much because they were able to beat the Hurricanes 3-1. They took the lead 2-1. So good for them. But I mean, it's kind of sad to see Rask say something like that. Before we get into the, you know, who our picks are for this coming up, Noah, I'll go to you first because the Pens had a chance here. They got knocked out in the first round, unfortunately. No one saw it coming that the Canadians would knock the Pens out. They were entered into the draft lottery. And somehow, some way, the Rangers ended up with a number one pick. They had the number two pick last year. They got the number one pick this year. Set their eyes on Lafreniere to just pick him and snag him in the first round. Is that fair? Is the NHL rigged? I mean, that a little sarcastically, but, like, come on. Like, the Rangers get the number one overall pick. There's so many other teams out there that could use that pick, and the Rangers get them. Noah, what do you think about that? How did you feel, you know, as from a Penn standpoint? I mean, you guys were in it too. It wasn't, you know, you guys were right there. You guys could have had the first pick too. What do you think about the Rangers getting that?
Yeah, I don't want to call the NHL rigged because obviously you don't want to believe that any professional sports league is going to rig something like that. But I do think it is definitely unfair that the Rangers got that first overall pick, especially because they had the second overall pick last year. And shifting over to the Penguins, it wasn't just a star-studded team like them that had a chance to get it. Toronto also had a chance at that first pick. Edmonton also had a chance at that first pick. Between those three teams, you have guys like Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, Austin Matthews, John Tavares. Like, those are all teams with star-studded players, and they all had a chance to get the first overall pick. I mean, I just don't think that that's fair at all. You look at a team like Detroit, who has been absolutely abysmal for the past few seasons, and they honestly haven't been that great of a franchise since them and the Penguins played in back-to-back Stanley Cup finals in, you know, 2008, 2009. So definitely unfair. I don't think the league made a right call by even allowing some of the playoff qualifying teams to have a chance at that first overall pick. I feel like it should have just been teams that missed the cut for this playoff format. But Mark, what do you think? I mean, do you honestly think that these teams who played in the playoffs deserved a chance at that first overall pick?
No, no. Look at the teams that, you know, were in the lottery to begin with before the series play-in even happened and they got picked. I mean, you look at teams like Detroit, you look at teams like Ottawa, like they need help. Like, they missed the playoffs. They Devils, they all need serious help. I realize the Devils had the first pick last year, but like, the Red Wings, they're a young team. They have some promising talent on their team, but, you know, I feel like they're more deserving of it than the Rangers. I mean, the Rangers are a good team. There is no reason that the Rangers should have gotten swept by the Carolina Hurricanes. Not to say the Hurricanes are not a good team, because they are, but I think the Rangers have a lot of talent. I mean, Panarin is an unbelievable talent. They have Kaapo Kakko. He's an unbelievable talent. Even though they shipped up Brady Shea and, you know, we may not know what their goalie situation is going to look like, but they have Georgiev back there behind Lundqvist if Lundqvist decides, you know, that his future is done. So I think that they have a pretty substantial team there. Now that they're going to have the first round pick, first overall pick, I mean, you know, that totally just might thrust them into next year being a playoff team coming in the Metro. I mean, Nate, I'd love to hear your take on this. You know, what do you think? Rangers first round pick, you think that it should have gone to them or maybe a different team? You know, how do you think, was it fair that the Rangers get the first round pick?
Was it fair? I'm not sure that it's me to decide that. Unfortunately, I don't get to work for the NHL just yet, but I'm sure my opinion may differ from others. I will say I'm excited that the Rangers get this opportunity. Kind of, Mark, you touched on it, the uncertain future with Henrik Lundqvist. As far as building a team around a arguably superstar goalie and most likely a first ballot Hall of Famer, being his contract situation is kind of uncertain. Do you think the fact that the Rangers now sort of have free dibs on Lafreniere, does that persuade him to stick around anymore? Does the Rangers front office sort of kind of have to keep him there at least so they have a stellar fore end and a stellar back end? I just wanted to get your opinion on it.
You know, I think that from a New York Rangers perspective, from a team perspective, I don't know if the Rangers organization as a whole is going to say, you know what, we need Lundqvist back because he's just way better and, you know, we need him in goal. I don't think that his performance on the ice the past year has really thrust him into the Henrik Lundqvist shell that he had throughout his whole career as, like you said, a first ballot Hall of Famer. Is his play this up to the same level? I don't know. And they have young guys in Georgiev and Shestorkin. So, I mean, they have some competent backups there. So I don't know if it will make Lundqvist stay or even make the Rangers front office want to give Lundqvist another contract. I mean, are you going to carry three very good goalies on your team? I mean, most teams it's two, and you have a great goalie tandem. And I think the goalie tandem they have without Lundqvist can do just fine. Plus, I feel like that also might help them in the cap space area too. Might be able to go out and get another free agent if they don't keep Lundqvist. What are your thoughts?
I mean, definitely agree. The NHL is a business, and especially if you have, as you mentioned, three solid goalies as opposed to the NHL average of two. I mean, as far as cap goes, you really don't need Lundqvist. It'll just sort of be interesting to see how it plays out. Lundqvist or not, I think the Rangers are in a great position to sort of have their way with the Metro next season. I'm not sure if any of you or either of you have had a chance to watch Lafreniere play, but he's just a beast. He's a great addition to any lineup. Look for the Rangers to have a lot of continued success, at least through the next few years.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. Their team is solid. When you have Panarin, you have Kako, you have Zibanejad, you have Chris Kreider. I mean, you just have a bunch of people on your team that are, you know, they're really good. You add Lafreniere to that, it makes you even better. And the goalie situation that they have is very good. So, you know, I think that they're in a prime position to make the playoffs next year. You know, God forbid something happens and they don't pick Lafreniere. But I think that their team as a whole, I think they look really good. But you know what? Let's move on to the big segment here in NHL, right? We're going to go through the teams that are in the playoffs right now. First round, we're going to say what the series is at right now, what we think, who's going to win, and in how many games. So, you know what, Noah, let's start with you. Okay. We're going to start on the East. We're going to go Philly and the Canadiens. It's tied up at 1-1 right now. They're actually playing right now as we're doing the show. So whoever wins this will, you know, it'll obviously change the tides. It's 1-0 right now in the third period, 10 minutes left. Flyers are up. But let's say, you know, let's give it to the Flyers. Let's say the Flyers go up 2-1. Who's going to win and in how many games?
This one might be actually a little surprising, just because Carey Price led the Montreal Canadiens past the Penguins brilliantly. He played fantastic in goal. I think he averaged like a 95-94% save percentage throughout that whole series. So hats off to him and the rest of the Canadiens for knocking off a great team like the Penguins. But I think they have an even tougher challenge here with the Flyers. Look, the Penguins still managed to get a game from the Canadiens, and they looked absolutely abysmal on the ice. They had zero energy alongside the Rangers. I think those two were definitely the bottom two performers and at least the biggest disappointment in the qualifying round. With that being said, I don't think the Canadiens are going to be able to last an entire series with Philadelphia and edge them out. If they do, I would think it would go seven games, but I think the Flyers have a much better goaltending situation with Carter Hart back there. He's stable. He looks good. He controls rebounds very well. I mean, and he's young, so these guys are definitely looking to get out there, at least make a run. They haven't had any playoff success in recent memory, so I don't think the Flyers will let those ones slip away from them. I think they'll win tonight, go up 2-1, and I think they'll take the series in six.
Nate, what do you think?
Kind of tough to tell with this one. I mean, I've really liked the way that Philly's played all year long. They play the game the right way. They play a hard-nosed style of East Coast hockey. I mean, all of us in the Metro and even into the Atlantic aren't any strangers to that. But Montreal's kind of an odd team. They don't really have too many big-name pieces. I mean, obviously they have Carey Price between the pipes and Shea Weber, who arguably has the hardest shot in the league, and I credit anybody who stands in front of that on a nightly basis. I'll just come out and say I like the Flyers. They're playing hot hockey. They've been playing the right way. I think they take the game tonight, and I think they take the entire series in six.
Yeah, I mean, you can't really compete with that. You look at the Canadiens, who they rely on. They were relying on, like Noah said, they're relying on Carey Price. And granted, the other game that they won the other night, I believe the score was 5-0. They actually had to pull Carter Hart from that game because he just, you know, you just had a bad day. He had a bad day of hockey. But I think the Canadiens are similar to the Blue Jackets in that they have a very good goaltending situation. And they're going to try and ride that, keep a low-scoring game, try and compete with that. But I think that the Flyers are just a well-rounded team that's going to beat them. I'm going to go Flyers in – you know what? I'm going to go Flyers in five here. I think the Canadiens got their one game, and I think the Flyers are going to take it in five games here. I don't think the Canadiens are going to get another win. I think the Flyers are too top heavy. But mentioning the Blue Jackets, let's go on there. Blue Jackets are behind the Lightning 2-1, but the Blue Jackets haven't looked bad. I mean, they've kept up with one of the best teams in the league here. Granted, the Lightning do not have Steven Stamkos. So Noah, I'm going to go to you. I'm going to go here to you first. We're going to go Lightning Blue Jackets. How many games do you think they're going to win, and who's going to win this matchup here? The Tampa Bay Lightning lead already 2-1 over the Blue Jackets. Who's going to win it and how many games?
Well, before we even get into it, I mean, they might end up playing in terms of total time 2 to 3 extra games. I mean, you know, 5 overtimes to just decide one playoff matchup is just absolutely ridiculous.
Game one of that playoff matchup, that was absurd.
Yeah, so that in itself, I think, impacts the series just because of how tired these guys are going to be if this goes the distance, which I think it very well could. And I'm just going to point to another goaltender here who I think has been playing outstanding in Jonas Korpisalo for the Columbus Blue Jackets. I thought that they were a little crazy to let Sergei Bobrovsky go to Florida via free agency. Well, clearly I was wrong because this dude is an absolute animal. Stopped 85 of 87 shots in that 5 overtime game. Granted, the Tampa Bay Lightning have themselves a stud in Andre Vasilevsky as well. I do think this one could go the distance, but I'm just going to continue to beat the dead horse here. I think I've picked Tampa Bay to go at least to the East Finals in the last couple of years. I mean, how many times have you and I talked about it, Mark, off show and in the past? Everyone just thinks the Lightning have too much talent and too much power. I mean, if you look at their roster, they're not necessarily weak on paper at any position. They have a good D core. They have fantastic weapons from their top three, center, left wing, right wing, just in that forward group. They look absolutely great on paper, and they have stud goaltending as well. So I'm just going to continue to ride with the Lightning here. I do think that they are a little more talented than Columbus, even though John Tortorella has that group buzzing. They're playing very well together, and they do have some okay pieces. I'm going to go Tampa Bay in seven.
I mean, Noah touched on it almost perfectly. Tampa's in the running for this thing every year. They do have the weapons. They have the goaltending. I mean, not having Steven Stamkos does hurt in the series. And to touch on Columbus, too, that's another East Coast hockey team that just plays hockey the right way. John Tortorella, you're either going to love him or you hate him, but he gets his guys up. Again, not very many superstars on that Columbus team, but they're all pulling the rope together. We'll say if Columbus ends up coming back in their game tomorrow, tied 2-2, it's going to be really anyone's series. I do like Tampa only just because on paper they have the talent that Columbus doesn't. But especially in the playoffs, hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. I'm not saying that Tampa won't pull the rope in the same direction, but I got to give the edge to the gritty hockey team. So I'll offer the caveat that if Columbus wins tomorrow, they're taking the series.
Wow. So if Columbus wins tomorrow, ties the series up 2-2, they're going to win the series?
Yeah, that's what I'm taking. Might be a hot take. We'll see how it goes, but the team's just hungry. You can watch it in the way they play. I mean, granted, they were playing an additional hockey team in that just absolute monster of an overtime game, but there was no quit in them. I mean, you saw him coming back the next game after. There was no quit. Legs are fresh. Boys are buzzing. So if they keep the train rolling, I don't see why they can't take it over in the series.
I kind of like that. I mean, two of the three games they played were one-score games, and then the game that wasn't, the Blue Jackets won, and they won 3-1. So I kind of like that. But I'm going to have to agree with Noah here. I think Tampa's too loaded. On paper, like you said, Nate, I think on paper they're the best team. They're the better of, you know, the two teams here. But, yeah, I like Tampa, and I'm going to go Tampa in six. I don't think it's going to go to seven. I don't think Columbus has enough spark. Corpusalo is a really good goaltender, but I just feel like they don't have enough. They just don't have the it factor. They don't have enough offense. They don't have enough firepower. So I don't think that – I don't think they're going to be able to knock off Tampa, and I do think they're going to be able to do it in six games. I don't think it's going to go to seven, but let's keep it in the East here. Let's go on to my team here. Let's go on to the Islanders Caps. Islanders up 3-0, one today. I'm just happy talking about this right now. It's amazing. Islanders up 3-0 on the Caps. Who do you guys think is going to win this, and in how many games?
I guess I'll lead it off here. It's a little disgusting for me to talk about it. I kind of throw up in my mouth when I talk about both of these teams because, you know, Metro rivals to both the Pens and the Caps there. They've defeated us in, you know, the past couple of playoff series. The Caps ended us in six a couple of years ago, and then the Islanders unfortunately swept us last year.
Get the brooms out.
Well, honestly, you know what? We'll keep the trend going. Get the brooms out again because the Caps look abysmal. They play with absolutely zero spark, and I'm going to point to one guy in Braden Holtby. He does not look as fresh as he did in those Penguins-Cap series a couple years ago. If you look at him from then to now, he looks like a completely different goaltender, and I don't know if the team necessarily has confidence with him back there. I mean, the Islanders are dominating puck possession in this series, and if they play with a lead, the Capitals, I just don't think that they even have enough fight in them to win the game back. I think that the Islanders are going to sweep the Caps here. They just do not look like they are interested in playing. I don't even want to say that they're, you know, as bad as the Pens, because obviously they at least are in this first round and they deserved a top four seed in the East. But look, I'm going to take the Islanders here in four. Washington just has zero juice right now.
Yeah, actually, you know what? It makes me happy you say that. I'm agree with you here. Islanders in four. I thought it might go to five, but they're hot. They play fundamental hockey. Barry Trotz has that team fired up. Granted, the power play is one of the worst in the league, but, you know, they play great defense. Varlamov is playing unbelievable. And then, you know, when it's tied or when they're clawing their way back, they'll capitalize on other teams' mistakes and just rifle them in the net. I mean, Anthony Beauvillier and Brock Nelson have just been deadly in the playoffs. JG Pageot has been absolutely absurd. And the Islanders, you know, when they got him at the trade deadline, he didn't win a game in the regular season with him on the team. The Islanders didn't. But now that he's in the playoffs, he's been playing absolutely unbelievable. And Matt Barzal today had the overtime winner. So, you know, just it's a great feeling. It's a great feeling to watch the boys out there. And I think that they're going to get it in four. Let's go. Nate, what do you think?
I mean, I don't want to be that guy who copies the takes, but I agree with you guys. They're a wagon of a hockey team. They play the right way. Barry Trotz has the boys going, like you said, Mark. Varlamov is always solid in between the pipes. Had a love-hate relationship with the Islanders. I mean, just as a Homer Pens fan. And it does sort of make me upset to my stomach to think about them doing well, but the Caps are playing very uninspired hockey. They don't deserve to win the series. I'm not going to make any guarantees about the Isles going forward, but I think they got the juice in the series. I'm going to say that it's going to be over in the next game. We're going to move on.
I love to hear it. That's music to my ears here. We're falling a little behind, so let's move on. Bruins. Hurricanes, Bruins leading 2-1. I mean, Hurricanes are definitely putting up a fight. They look really good. I'm going to start off here. I'm going to go, you know what? I think the Bruins look good, but now that they don't have Rask and they got Halak, I do think the Hurricanes can knock them off. I'm going to go Hurricanes in seven here. Contrary to my NHL bracket that I did before the series, I had Bruins beating the Canes, but I don't know. I think the Canes look really good. I'm going to go Canes in seven. Noah, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm going to follow you, follow your lead here. I do think it's Canes in seven for me. Like you said, they're up 2-1 right now, but I do think the Hurricanes have the momentum because one, Rask dropped out, even though that the Bruins did survive that last matchup without Rask and they won 3-1. It's just another one of those fundamental hockey teams that doesn't necessarily have a, you know, a true superstar, if you want to call it that. I mean, they do have Sebastian Aho there. He's their biggest player, but they definitely have some quality second, third line guys. They also play their fourth line a decent amount. They have a great checking line. Nate's been saying it all show, and it seems to be a trend that whenever he says a fundamental hockey team, these seem to be the teams that are actually performing very well. And we'll point back to the Islanders and how they're performing against the Caps, who look better on paper. I think it's a similar situation here with Carolina. I feel like this is going to be a gutsy series from here on out. Carolina is absolutely hungry. I do think that they take the game tomorrow night at 8, and then from that point on, I think it's going to go to 7, and I'll take the Hurricanes in 7.
I'll kind of jump
Nate, what do you got?
I'll kind of jump in here on that one. An interesting stat that I just kind of have. In their last 10 games, Carolina is 7-3. Now, of course, the play-in series with the Rangers and the stoppage of play back in March does have quite a bit to do with that. I'll say it again. They're just a team that plays the right way. Looking at the Bruins, I mean, losing to Rask does hurt. Don't get me wrong. But they're a solid hockey team as well. There's no reason that the guys in front of them aren't going to play in front of whoever gets the start between the pipes for the Bruins. I believe the game's tomorrow, correct? Yeah, it is tomorrow. Sorry, my brain's escaping me. This one is a complete toss-up. If you would ask me last year, how would I score a playoff series between the Canes and the Bruins, I would have said that you were nuts. The Bruins are going to take it in four games, and they're going to move on, but as Don Cherry called them last year, the bunch of jerks. They just seem to play well, and they have fun doing it. So it's a toss up. I like Canes in seven. I think I'm going to stick to my guns with that one. Yeah, that's about all I have for them.
All right. All right. Good takes there. Let's move on to the West here. Let's start one of the most intriguing ones who, you know, I don't want to toot my own horn here, but I did pick Vancouver to go pretty far in the playoffs, and Vancouver's up 2-0 over the Blues. I love Vancouver here. I think Vancouver's going to win this in six. I'm going to give them six. I think Vancouver's got so much power. They're a young team, and they just, you know, the boys are buzzing here, and they're playing right now. The game just started. Blues Knucks, it's 0-0, but you know what? Knucks are up 2-0. I think the Knucks are going to steal this thing in six. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I'll go first here. I'm going to one up you, Mark. I do think that they're actually going to take it in five. You did call that out on previous shows that the Vancouver Canucks were the dark horse team that we picked earlier on to, you know, make some noise in this playoff format, and they've been doing it. Look, I think the Blues are a little shocked right now. They were expecting to come in, and I don't want to say have an easy play-in series against the Canucks, but they just play fast hockey. I think they have one of the youngest rosters in the NHL. I'll point to Bo Horvat. He looks fantastic for them. And I think the guys around him kind of just play a similar style to that of Carolina, where it's gritty, it's fast-paced, they're extremely physical, and they're just going to get pucks on the net. I think Binnington got a little lucky last year just in terms of how well the Bruins were doing in their offensive group with all the momentum. I mean, they were dead last at the midpoint of last year, and they just had all of the momentum going into the playoffs. I don't think they have that right now. If the Canucks win tonight, they honestly could sweep. I don't think that the Blues are going to let this series go in a sweep, but I do think the Canucks could take it in five.
Damn. Five games. I mean, the Knucks, they're hot. They're hot, and I think it all depends on tonight. Nate, what do you think?
All right, first I'll start off by saying I really like the way that Vancouver plays, but I want to touch on the Blues first. Last year was a special group. I don't think the NHL is ever going to see that kind of group again, going from last place at Christmas all the way to winning everything. They had a lot of time off last summer. They had kind of had a very middle of the road regular season before the stoppage this season. It's not the same group that went all the way. And I think Vancouver's starting to expose that. Not sure if you guys paid much attention to game one. Vancouver had it the entire way going into overtime. In their game on Friday, they still had the edge. The pace of play is fast. It's ferocious. Brock Besser on the back end, Quinn Hughes, Bo Horvat, just disgusting hockey players. I like the Canucks
ridiculous.
In five.
Ridiculous. Ridiculous team, young team, and I love them. In my bracket, I picked them to go to the Western Conference Finals. I think they're that good. Let's move on here. Stars, Calgary, probably the most shocking to me right now. Calgary and Stars tied up 2-2. Unbelievable game today. Went into OT. Stars clawed their way back. You know what? It's a toss-up. I'd love to say Calgary's going to pull this off because they have one of my favorite players in Johnny Gaudreau. But I'm going to have to go Stars in seven. I think Stars are going to be able to edge it out. I think Pavelski is really, really good. I think Jamie Benn is really good. And you know what? I don't know where Ben Bishop is, but he needs to come back because they really need him in goal there. And I think that if they get him back and they get, you know, the full team going, I think that they can knock off Calgary in seven. It's going to be a really close finish because Calgary is loaded too. They got a bunch of good players on that team. And Cam Talbot is no joke. He's playing really well in net. So, you know what? I'm going to go Stars in seven. Nate, what do you think?
I'm actually going to knock you down a peg. I'm going to go Stars in six. Talking about the Stars, they're actually an unreal hockey team in the West. No one really pays attention to them, but they are deep with veterans. Joe Pavelski's been in the league forever. And Tyler Seguin, Jamie Benn, they're solid hockey players. And then you go down sort of a little bit deeper into the lineup, Rube Hintz, Alexander Radulov is an absolute farm animal. Jamie Oleksiak during his time with the Pens, just solid on the blue line. Corey Perry somehow found his way from being a California kid all the way into Dallas. They're just a good hockey team. Don't get me wrong. Calgary is gritty. I mean, how many battles of Alberta do you need to watch? Really only one to know that they're a scrappy hockey team. They get up, they play. It's another team that plays the right way, but this Dallas team is starting to look kind of special. So I'm going to go Dallas in six.
Noah, what do you got here?
Yeah, I'm going to just going to have to disagree with both of you guys here. Cause I don't think you're giving Calgary the credit where it's due. I do think it's a toss up of a series. I think both Dallas and Calgary play a very similar style game. It's fast paced. Both two underrated teams out of the West. I don't think a lot of the West teams get as much attention as the blue blood teams from the East. But you look at Calgary, I mean, they have guys like Matthew Tkachuk, Johnny Gaudreau, Shane Monahan. I mean, those are all great pieces up front. They have Mark Giordano on the blue line there, so that's a fantastic addition to their power play, and he's a great first-line D-man to captain that D-core. And like you said, Mark, Cam Talbot's playing fantastic. And when it comes to this series, I'm going to take Calgary in seven games. I do think it'll go the distance. This is going to be a fight to the end, but I do think Calgary edges them out in goaltending, and I'm going to take them in seven.
So last two games in the West that are going on, Avs Coyotes and Knights Blackhawks. Let's start with the easy one here. Knights Blackhawks. Knights were up 3-0 and then dropped one tonight against the Blackhawks. They dropped one. It was a close one. I mean, it was 2-1, and then they scored an empty netter, so they finished off 3-1. They lost the Blackhawks. Knights look like a championship-caliber team. They look like a team that can honestly make it to the finals. They look really good, stronger than almost all the teams in the West, I think. In my opinion, I think they're really, really strong. Vegas is going to win the next game and end it. Vegas in five. I think that's pretty easy. That's just my opinion. I think they're too strong. They're best goalie tandem in the league in the playoffs right now between Fleury and Robin Lehner. They just have unbelievable talent on the offense and defense. Their defense is kind of where they struggle the most, but I wouldn't even call it struggling. Blackhawks they're all right. I mean, they're a decent team, but they're not that good. I mean, they were able to beat up Edmonton, but I mean, Jonathan Toews is really good and Patrick Kane's still very good. But I think Corey Crawford really, he's a very average goaltender. He's not really a championship caliber goaltender. So I think they're going to need some help, but I'm going to go Vegas in five here.
Yeah, Marco, I'll echo that. I think it's going to be Vegas in five. And actually looking at an interesting stat here, according to moneypuck.com, they are the favorite at this point to win the cup at 24.5%. Another team in the West that we'll get really to, I'm sure, here shortly, follows them up with Colorado. Big West heavy this year. But getting back to Vegas.
Wow.
I'm sorry, getting back to the Vegas and Knights series. Yeah. Knights are going to end it on Tuesday. Knights at five.
Yeah, the only thing I'm going to disagree with you guys is just the amount of games. I definitely think Vegas is going to win this series, but I do think Chicago is just going to throw absolutely everything they have at Vegas in this next game just to try to keep it close and keep it competitive. I don't want to say that Vegas is going to take a rest here, but they're probably on cruise control here for at least the next game. I'm not saying that they're not going to take it seriously, but there's no reason for them to absolutely kill themselves in effort just to end this game or end this series in five. I think Chicago has no chance to win the series. Vegas looks too good. Mark, like you said, best goaltending tandem in the league. If there's any problems with Fleury, put Lehner in, vice versa. If Lehner's struggling, put Fleury back in. But I do think that Chicago is going to take the next one in another close battle just because they're throwing absolutely everything at this next game to try to stay in the series. So I'm just going to go Vegas in six.
All right. Well, we all have Vegas to win. I don't think we really disagree on any of these winners right here besides Noah thinking Calgary is going to beat Dallas, which could happen. I mean, the series tied up there. But let's move on to the last matchup that Nate said. You know, Avs are favored here, one of the favorites to win the Cup. Kind of one of the series that's kind of going under the radar a little bit. Avs are leading the Coyotes 2-1. Coyotes could put up a good fight the other day. ended up beating the Avalanche 4-2. So that's not too bad. But I think the Avalanche are just too strong. I mean, they just have too many good players on that team. And I think that they're really just going to they're gonna put the nails to the Coyotes. I'm going to go Colorado in six. I don't think that they're going to win the next two games in a row. I think they're going to win the next one. And then the Coyotes might win another one, make the series 3-2, make it interesting. I think the Avs, at the end of the day, they're too much of a powerhouse. And you know what? I see how the Avs are favored, you know, one of the favorites to win the Cup. But I think that there's a lot of teams out there that have better defense and better goaltending than the Avs do. The Avs have absolutely a one of the most loaded offenses in the entire league. But I just think that I just think when it comes to overall team and the Cup, I think that they, you know, their defense and their goaltending is kind of where their downfall is as a team as a whole. But I'm going to go Avs in six here. Nate, what do you got?
Again, I'm going to echo it. I'm going to go Avs in six. If anybody listens to Spit and Chicklets, you know that Paul Bissonnette, one of the funniest guys on earth, thinks the Yotes are a wagon of a hockey team. And they're not a bad team. Trust me, they're not. But the Avs are just disgusting. I mean, Nathan MacKinnon, Cale Makar. What? Truly, I'm not sure what more you want. Andrei Burakovsky. They're just a good hockey team. I mean, we all talk about the East being a gritty sort of style of play, the West Coast being fast, more offensive-centric, but the Avs got that grit, too. They really, really do. I think they handle this in six. It's going to be interesting to see who they get in the next round, and I'm sure that we can have a discussion about who they get next and what their odds are, but I think they handle it in six here.
You know what? Just to shake things up, look, I actually think that Darcy Kuemper is playing absolutely fantastic for the Phoenix Coyotes. He's exceeding expectations. I think this is just an underrated group with Phoenix. I think if they can somehow beat the Avs in the next game, that this thing's definitely going to go to seven, and I could just see an upset happening here. It looks like everyone's sort of counting Phoenix out just because of Nathan MacKinnon and the rest of the Avalanche team just being the heavy favorite. But you know what? I'm just going to go on a limb here, say Phoenix in seven. I feel like if they keep it close with that core group with Taylor Hall, Phil Kessel, who else do they have on that squad? They actually have a decent amount of big names on that squad. I think who do they have? Oliver Ekman-Larsson, sorry, excuse me. He's on defense. Clayton Keller, very solid winger.
Marian Hossa.
Still just, you know, got a good combo of vets and a good combo of young guys there. So I'm going to go Phoenix in seven. This will be my just wild card team. Don't know if it'll happen, but I'm going to take Phoenix in seven.
Damn, that's kind of a hot take right there. I mean, Abs are rolling. I mean, and I think they play tomorrow, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, they do. Tomorrow, 5:30. So, I mean, it's going to be interesting. We'll get a little score update here. Flyers beat the Canadiens 1-0. So, Flyers take a 2-1 lead. And Blues and Canucks are still tied 0-0. 6 minutes left in the first. But that pretty much wraps up the NHL talk. Let's move on here to the NFL. Let's switch gears. You know, we did a lot of NHL talk. Let's switch gears to the NFL. A lot of stuff happened this week, actually, in the NFL. Let's start off with Hard Knocks. Hard Knocks happens every year. They follow one team's training camp, and they see, you know, how they do in the preseason, which there is no preseason now, but it's just going through training camp. This year, they picked two teams. Noah, can you walk us through how Hard Knocks is this year?
Yeah, I mean, it's to be expected with the virus. It's just a lot of virus news, pretty much. It's how both LA teams, so the Chargers and the Rams, are the two teams that they're doing on Hard Knocks this year, which is a little bit of a change of pace just because they normally focus on following one team. But because they're both in LA, they're tackling both at the same time. So the first episode really just followed all the protocols with COVID, making sure players are safe. They did plenty of Zoom calls and Zoom meetings and showing how that works with the players. And then when they are actually returning to training camp, all the testing that goes into making sure that they're fit to practice, making sure they're safe. They also covered some Jalen Ramsey contract talk. He got a little heated in an interview with some reporters. So that was about the most drama that was on the episode. But other than that, pretty standard with the COVID stuff. So we won't talk about it too much other than, you know, it's COVID football and they're going to talk about it all throughout Hard Knocks. And they're just going to talk about it all throughout the NFL season this year. So I don't want to say that I'm tired of it, but there's plenty more to just mention in future shows. So we won't get into it too much farther than that.
Yeah. And, you know, another topic happened in the NFL. Alex Smith is coming back. He was cleared for football operations. Noah and I did this in a show, one of our first shows. We went over whether or not Alex Smith should come back. I said I hope that he never plays QB again just for his own health. And I really don't want to watch him play QB because I would just be nervous that he's going to break his leg again. Noah said he's going to play a game. Noah, you still stand by that? You think he's going to be a starter for at least one game this season?
I do. Yeah, I think Alex Smith is going to play. Officially activated off of the PUP list. He's ready to go for the Washington football team, not the Washington Redskins. So I had to make a note myself for that. I wanted to call them the Skins as well. But, you know, that injury, it happened 21 months ago, which is a super, super long period of time to be out of football. It was absolutely gruesome. I mean, we've talked about it in the past. I think most people who follow the NFL have seen pictures of the leg look absolutely disgusting. But I'll give you some interesting stats here, Mark. So going into that game where he did get injured, the Redskins were in first place in the NFC East. They were 6-3. So he had them. Alex Smith had that team rolling. Granted, it's not the same team as it was. Obviously, the roster is a little bit depleted now, but his QB play was fine. Through nine games, he had 2,200 yards passing, 10 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, 86 passer rating. And he also had a rushing touchdown on the ground. So that's pretty much Alex Smith's MO as game manager. Those aren't stats that wow you, but they're not garbage stats either. He's just going to be a solid quarterback. He's kind of like a Ryan Tannehill. You get what you get with him. He's not going to necessarily go out there and win you a game like a Russell Wilson, but he's not going to lose you a game. And I think, I don't want to say if this is a throwaway, but if Dwayne Haskins looks like he's not prepared, he needs more time to develop, it could be a situation like Tua and Ryan Fitzpatrick where you just throw the veteran in there. If the Redskins aren't going to be rolling in that division this year and they're not going to be a contender, which, you know, Mark, you and I believe that they won't be, I do think Alex Smith's going to come in and at least play one game.
But now, I mean, if you look at that QB room, it's crowded. Haskins, Kyle Allen, Alex Smith. We saw what Kyle Allen has to offer. He played for the Carolina Panthers last season, and his signature play was checking it down to Christian McCaffrey every single play. So we know what he's capable of. I'm still high on the Dwayne Haskins train. I think Dwayne Haskins, and I might be one of the very few out there that thinks Dwayne Haskins is actually a decent QB. I think he could be a good QB this year. I think he could be a legitimate starter. They got some great weapons around him. I mean, Terry McLaurin is actually a really good wide receiver. They got rid of Jordan Reed, still got Vernon Davis. I mean, they don't have Darius Geis anymore because of his off the field problems. But I mean, if you look at this team, their defense is nice. You bring in, you know, Ryan Kerrigan, Landon Collins, and now you get Chase Young on the defense. Not a bad team. And I think that when it comes to Alex Smith, he's been out of football, like you said, for over a year and a half. I think that you might want to give Haskins a chance. And I mean, he's the future. Alex Smith is not the future. That's the thing. And this is my thing with Alex Smith. Because he's not the future and because this team is not a win now team, why would you play him? That's my thing. Why would you play him when you could develop Dwayne Haskins playing him? And, you know, if Haskins tanks, great. You fall in the draft, you get a high pick again, and you pick another team and you rebuild because they're rebuilding right now. They have so many problems. The Washington football team has so many problems. I don't think it's smart to start Smith. I don't know about you, but I wouldn't start him.
Yeah, I don't know about starting him. I do think Haskins is going to be the starter week one, but it's not far-fetched for me to say that Alex Smith isn't capable of playing in at least one game this year. Even if it's the week 17 game where they're just like, you know what, Haskins has played enough this year, just throw Alex Smith in there. I think that he is going to be on the field at some point. And honestly, if it's not in Washington, I could see him getting traded somewhere else. Because like you said, Kyle Allen, I mean, we've seen him, I don't want to necessarily call him a starter, but he fell into a starting role last year with Carolina after Cam Newton's injury troubles. He, you know, considering the circumstances, I don't want to say that he did okay because the team ended with a losing record, but he looked more serviceable than a guy like Nathan Peterman, who was thrown into the position with the Bills. So with that QB room being crowded, say another team has injury woes at the QB position and their quarterback room looks a little scarce, Alex Smith is a great veteran to come in. He knows how to learn new systems. He's been in multiple different teams. So I honestly think that whether it's with Washington or another team, he'll see the field this year at some point.
That's a fair assumption. Let's move on to the George Kittle contract that happened this year. It happened this week. He is an absolute beast. He's one of the best tight ends in the league, if not the best tight end in the league. 5 years, $75 million deal. Unbelievable. What do you think? First reactions. Well, let's start with you, Noah. First reactions here. George Kittle, does he deserve this contract? And is San Francisco smart for locking him up for so long and so much money?
You know, normally, you know, we say it all the time with skill position players that they're the most expendable, but George Kittle is I'm going to call him a generational talent just because of what he does so well at the tight end position. He doesn't necessarily have a weakness. He blocks great. He can get open down the field. He's a fantastic pass catcher. His run after catch ability is absolutely incredible. And I just think of that Saints game where he carried literally, it looked like five people on his back just down the field. So he's extremely dynamic and one of the most explosive players in all of football. He's really coming into his own as a star. We talked about it on prior shows that he was the highest ranked tight end ever on the NFL top 100 list. Don't know if I agree with that because I think Gronk was more explosive during his tenure with the Pats. But still, we'll go back to the contract. 5 years, $75 million. This is Jimmy Garoppolo's go-to guy. And I do think it will be for years to come because Jimmy G's there to stay in San Francisco. Kyle Shanahan loves him, knows exactly how to incorporate him into that offense. Jimmy Garoppolo loves him. He's going to be all-reliable for the next 5 years, maybe more if Jimmy G and Kittle both stick around in San Francisco that long. I do think that they were smart to pay him because I feel like he's just a game changer. You have a handful of guys in the league that you could truly call game changers on any given play. If they have the ball in their hands, they're going to make something special happen. I think that that's Kittle. And honestly, at the tight end position, I think there's only two guys right now that you can say are game changers, and it's Kittle and Kelce. And where were they last year? Both in the Super Bowl. So I think it was a very smart move by San Francisco to sign him to this deal. I think it was worth it.
Nate, do you think the tight end position, you know, we've seen a lot of good tight ends in our time here. Rob Gronkowski, we saw the tail end of Tony Gonzalez. We saw Antonio Gates. We're now seeing Travis Kelce, Zach Ertz, now George Kittle. What do you think the role of a tight end, how is it been, you know, growing in a team? And, you know, is it one of the, would you say, top 10 most important positions on the entire team in today's day and age in football?
Yeah, I mean, to answer your question just right off the top, 100%, I think it's in the top 10 of importance of positions. I mean, just look at George Kittle. I mean, Noah, both of you, I believe, used the term game changer. And really, he could do it in multiple different ways. I mean, 1,000 receiving yards last year, if I'm not mistaken, 85 catches, blocking. He's a quarterback security blanket. I mean, just in my mind, and believe me, I'm no football expert, but a tight end is sort of the whole toolbox, if that makes sense. Run blocking, pass blocking, the ability to get the ball in their hands and make something happen on offense. They're sort of asked to do everything on the offensive side of the football, and they do it relatively unsung. So when you get these guys like Travis Kelce and you get these guys like Kittle who are kind of doing everything and doing it the right way, they're kind of unstoppable. And the fact that Kittle got the bag that he did, by all means, he deserves it. I think you're going to see that position becoming a little bit more coveted, especially with guys with talent. I mean, you're never going to replace your skill wide receivers. By no means are we looking to do that. But a guy that is sort of the whole package of just an athlete. And I know he's not a tight end, but Taysom Hill is another example. Just these guys who they'll just do whatever you ask them to do. And Kittle is one of those guys. And he does it with flair. He does it with strength. He does it with power. He deserves everything that he gets.
Yeah, I kind of like that. You know, players are just evolving now. You know, they're turning into Swiss Army knife players, not playing one position, kind of doing everything like Taysom Hill is. But, you know, we're running low on time. Let's move on here. Two new contracts got given out. Everson Griffin signing with the Cowboys. Noah, initial reaction, does this make the Cowboys defense that much better? Or, you know, at least does it bring the leadership presence? How do you think this affects the Cowboys defense?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an upgrade, absolutely. Everson Griffin signed a one-year deal, $6 million deal. You know, he's at the back half of his career. That's why it's such a sort of short-term contract. But I do think it helps the Cowboys, not only from what Everson Griffin brings in terms of his play, but like you mentioned, that veteran leadership. I do think it'll be a great addition to that defensive side of the ball. They do have some younger pieces there on defense that could definitely use a strong leadership presence from a guy like Griffin who's played in the league for so long. But I think the Cowboys defense was already a pretty solid one to begin with, so I'm not going to say that this turns them into a top five defense, but it definitely makes them a more solid group. I definitely put them in the top half of the league, so I think it's a good acquisition for them. You know, they said that they were monitoring him during the offseason here, and they were just waiting for the right time for both parties to sign a deal. So I think both of them are happy. I think Griffin's happy to be on a playoff caliber team there with Dallas, and I feel like Dallas is happy to have him in their locker room. So the Cowboys had a busy offseason, to say the least. They signed a lot of players in free agency. And I still think that they do have the contract leaving with Dak Prescott. So they've been signing a lot of deals, getting pen to paper there. So Jerry Jones has been making some moves for sure.
Making some moves. I love that. I love Everson Griffin there. He's a great player. And he's exactly what they needed. You know, him alongside DeMarcus Ware, it's a great pick. And I think that it'll really help them. DeMarcus Lawrence, not DeMarcus Ware. But let's move on to the last topic here because we're running out of time. Kenny Clark signed an extension with the Packers, making him the highest paid nose tackle in the history of the NFL. He signed a 4-year, $70 million contract. Kenny Clark posted back-to-back 6-sack seasons. Before that, he posted a 4.5-sack season, has been an absolute game changer for that Packers defense, especially on that D-line. You know, what do you think? Do you think he's the best nose tackle in the league? Do you think Kenny Clark deserves that kind of a contract there?
Yeah, I do. I think Kenny Clark is, if not considered the best, he's definitely top three. And it just goes alongside a Packers defense who I think is probably one of the most underrated groups in the league. You have linebacker Za'Darius Smith. You have corners and Jair Alexander and Kevin King, who are both very solid. Darnell Savage and Adrian Amos are an underrated safety group. I mean, we talked about it as well. I think Alex Martinez was a fantastic player at linebacker for them as well. So they have unreal players on that defensive side of the ball. And I feel like this contract here that he signed is going to anchor that defense going forward. I mean, Kenny Clark, like you said, back-to-back 6-sack seasons. He's been on the Packers for his entire career. And I feel like the reason why they inked such a large deal there is because they know the talent that he brings. He's going to be a force to be reckoned with for years to come. And I feel like he's going to make Green Bay, you know, a contender in this division like they always are.
I agree here. I think that it's a good deal. I think that it's a little rich for a player like Kenny Clark Graded the 14th best interior lineman on PFF. He's really young, which kind of helps him. And, you know, he plays with an absolute spark. And like you said, alongside Za'Darius Smith and that entire Green Bay Packers defense, I think that it really adds to them. And they just see a lot of value in him. And I mean, I would too. He's made the Pro Bowl once, and I think that he hasn't even scratched the surface of his potential getting back-to-back six sack seasons. I think he's really good, and I think that he'll be really good for the Packers. I think it's a great signing. I just think it's a little bit rich, but, you know, that's all the devil's in the details there. You're getting a great player. You know, I'm not saying he's a slouch by any means, but, you know, he's a good player, and I think they're getting a lot of value here. But we kind of ran out of time here, so we won't be able to get to the NBA talk. NBA playoffs start this week. I just want to add real quick, if everyone wants to go around and say just really quickly who they're looking forward to most. And I'm going to start here and go with the Portland Trailblazers. I mean, I said this last show. I think the Trailblazers were going to be able to sneak in the playoffs, and they did. I'm excited. And you know what? I'm a big LeBron fan, and I thought the Lakers were going to be able to do it this year and win it. I'm going to go Blazers upset the Lakers. Hot take, Blazers are going to upset the Lakers. I think that it's going to happen, and that's the series I'm looking forward to most. Noah, what are you looking forward to?
Kind of stole my thunder there. I absolutely love Portland. I feel like they have all of the momentum in the world here. Damian Lillard is a top five player in the league, in my opinion. He's just absolutely fantastic right now. Can't be stopped. Best player in the bubble alongside Devin Booker, who, if the Suns were in the playoffs, would absolutely love to take them in an upset pick as well. But another team besides Portland that I'm looking at are the Dallas Mavericks. I mean, Luka Doncic is another player who just doesn't get enough credit. He drops, you know, 20-plus point games like nothing. It's like taking candy from a baby from him. And they also have Kristaps Porzingis there as well. He's another very solid talent. I just think that they're an electric offense. If they can put together, you know, some nice defensive performances, I feel like they could also make a deep run here at the playoffs in the West, considering that the Lakers, you know, seem to be falling off and they're at the one seed. So I feel like there's going to be a lot of upsets here in the West for sure.
That's all the time we have for this week. Nate, I want to thank you, man. Thanks for coming on, dude, sharing your insight in the NHL. I think it's an absolute pleasure, and we'd love to have you on again, man.
Hey, guys, I really appreciate you having me on. Always a good time to talk to both of you. And yeah, by all means, maybe if my picks aren't complete trash after round one, we'll have to do this again as the playoffs go forward.
Absolutely, dude. Absolutely. And you know what? I really like your picks. I don't know about Noah's Arizona over the Avalanche, but you need a hot take here and there. Noah, as always, dude, it's been an absolute pleasure.
You always want to call out some of my takes, and look, the slander, you know what? I know I'm going to get it with you. It's fine. I have to be the one to make the hot takes, because honestly, I think I'm carrying the hot takes among the group, Mark. I think you just always pick the favorites. But you know what, dude? We'll agree to disagree. Always a great time recording. Looking forward to next week's show.
Absolutely. And guys, keep a lookout on our Twitter. We're going to be posting more gambling takes this week. Thanks a lot.